Yeah, so we're really excited. We call it the BT5, the Brent Taylor 5, and it's a leadership workshop that we take mostly to high school students and college campuses, but it's based on the high school graduation speech that Brent gave as the student body president in 1997 at Chandler High School.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, presented by Minky Couture, where everyday people share real-life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best life. I'm Michelle Scharf.
And I'm Jenny Taylor, and today I could use a Minky Couture on my lap because the day that we are recording is cold and snowy and sleety and haily all in one. And by the time this airs, it's probably 80 degrees outside because it's spring in Utah. So
yay, Utah.
Minky has you covered for all your blankets. They have really heavy, luxurious blankets. They have some lighter, luxurious blankets for when it's not quite so cold. 6 great stores right here in Utah, or find them online at minkycouture.com for all of your snuggly needs.
And I'm coordinating today in my leopard print infant Minky and my leopard
and your leopard print blouse. You do look amazing. So, I wish all of our listeners could be in studio with us to see the look. It is a great look.
So Jenny, today we're going to talk about the Brent Taylor Foundation and the training that you do in conjunction with that foundation.
Yeah, so we're really excited. We call it the BT5, the Brent Taylor 5, and it's a leadership workshop that we take mostly to high school students and college campuses. But I will tell you, I've also used that as the basis for a fair number of just keynote speeches with businesses, corporations, other organizations. But for right now, our focus is on young people, helping young people become tomorrow's leaders with a bit of a civic and patriotism undertone because of obviously coming from our foundation and our mission that we have. But it's based on the high school graduation speech that Brent gave as the student body president in 1997 at Chandler High School. So Kellyanne, maybe with your awesome editing skills, you could throw in we've got a YouTube video of it and put in a clip. So he opened up this graduation speech talking about self-help programs, 12-point systems like AA or other things in life. And he said, there's not enough time at graduation to talk about 12, so we're going to talk about 5. And he puts out 5 points. And I did not know him then. In fact, I didn't meet him for close to 6 years after that. I did meet him 6 years after that. And I didn't know that speech existed until about 6 months after he died.
Oh, wow.
But some friends of his who'd served in student government, junior high and high school, I don't know if one of them remembered it or stumbled upon somebody old VHS tape or something, but they reached out several months later and said, hey, we thought you'd like watching this and show your kids. It's Brent when he's 17 and speaking. It came to me in such a powerful moment. Michelle, I know you've had those moments with John where maybe you just needed a reminder of who he is or was or who you are. You're just looking for some confirmation that death isn't the end of all things. And I think I was in a pretty low spot when those friends reached out. And I was so grateful they did, because here I'm watching this younger version of the man who would later become my husband. And the words he spoke just really resonated with me. And it felt as if it's what he would want me to know for how to survive widowhood. I think for sure it's what he would want me to teach our children as parents. Yeah. And it was kind of like the voice whispering from the dust of, hey, here's what I would say. Because sometimes you wonder, oh, what would Brent do if he were here? I just wish I could talk to him for a minute. So that's kind of the context for the speech itself. So what we do, we take these 5 points. We've designed a logo. We've got T-shirts. We've got notebooks and things. And we started taking it a couple of years ago to Chandler High, right, where Brent delivered that speech down in Arizona. The school was great to work with. We put in a beautiful memorial plaza. We'll share some pictures on our show notes. And if you look at our social media, you can see them. They just let us put in this nice little plaza with a memorial plaque and a couple benches, just a reflection spot on campus. And it has his photo and indicates that he served as a student body president and then later his military years of service and his death date. So we went down there completely unknown to the Chandler High community and blessed that principal and administration for letting us show up. Kind of had to twist their arms and say, promise it'll be good. I promise it'll be meaningful. And we had maybe 60 or 7 students that first year. And they came in, and what we do that makes this workshop, I think, really fun is it's not just me talking, it's not just one person presenting 5 points over and over, but when we're on a high school campus, we bring in 5 alumni from that community.
Oh, wow.
And we give them each one of the 5. And then I'm kind of the moderator because I'm there and might as well do something. So I kind of open it and then moderate it. And I'll tell you the five in a quick minute. I know you're on eggshells just waiting.
I am, actually. But I've got my list ready to go.
When we talk about these five, we say these are five that Brent Taylor identified. We're going to talk about those today. But from the very beginning, we tell the students, the whole goal of today is for you to think of your five. And we tell them, quite honestly, think of pointers you might give your graduating class if you could kind of be king for the day and give everyone advice. But try to think of that advice in a meaningful way that could outlive you, because Brent's did. What advice would you give your classmates that you could also give your spouse, your future children? Keep in mind, most of these students are 14, 15, 16 years old. And so at the end, after we presented these five in kind of an interactive, dynamic way, different presenters from different backgrounds, different professions and levels of success, then we let the students work on their five. And then they share it in a group. And we take the big wall poster, post-it notes. They are my favorite. I love them so much. And we have the students write down their five. And then we go around the room and they share. And that's really where the real meaning comes, right? It's one thing to listen to an adult. And the reason that we do it with the alumni, or part of the reasoning is, I don't know about you, but I've been to several motivational speeches with really phenomenal people. Or you've watched that YouTube video from the guy with 5 million or billion followers.
Right.
And it's really easy to think, yeah, that guy is really successful. Or that lady from New York with a ton of money was able to pull that off. But not me. I'm just dot, dot, dot. Or so we go to Chandler, Arizona, Ogden, Utah, whichever community it is, Weber State campus. And then we say, hey, the people you're hearing from today are from your community. They grew up in these neighborhoods. They faced a lot of the same demographics you face, even if it was a few years ago or lots of years ago. But I think it makes it that much more relatable, especially when we're working with students who might be from socioeconomically difficult backgrounds. Maybe their family hasn't had great success with college or career in the past. Maybe they're the first one in their family that's going to kind of try to do something of a different nature. And we make sure that these five presenters come from five different backgrounds. It's not all five executive CEO white males coming in and talking. We get men and women, we get ethnic diversity, and we get professional diversity.
Yeah.
And then it's really fun. So are you ready?
Oh, yeah, wait, talk I'm first. Ready. Before you go into
you
that, though, I
wait.
Love that concept. And I'll tell you why. It's part of the reason why I wanted to do this show. Because I had met these everyday walk of life people that are busy in their communities, raising their families, doing their life. And I happened to meet them at a political event. And I learned about them and their stories and the hardships or trials that they've overcome. And we often do see those people with the million followers or
on a pedestal.
On a pedestal, or they've accomplished great things, or maybe they had accomplished great things before some tragedy happened.
Sure.
And then they were also able, they already had a platform to be seen.
To weather
and
that storm, sure.
Right. And for me, I'm like, we're all struggling with everything every day in our life. And everyday people have everyday struggles that are big and sometimes unsurmountable in so many ways.
And usually unseen by most people around them.
Right.
Yeah.
And even in their community, even in their church groups or in their whatever, they may not feel open to totally sharing with their neighbors as easy as they found it to maybe open up to me and then maybe share with us on our platform here.
Right.
And so I love that you're looking at alumni that are just regular people that have been successful in their own communities, but we're alumni from the college or school that these kids are in.
Yeah. And we've really found that. And I love that you mentioned that, because everybody has a story, right? It's easy for me to show up and say, hi, my story was on the news and my story came with a headline because I married a soldier who was killed in a moment of battle or whatever. But the truth of the matter is I've endured other things in my life or other learning experiences or trials or difficulties that never made it to the news. Most people still don't know about them, even though I speak all the time and tell elements of my story.
Right.
But everybody has a story. And what we like to do is get these students thinking about the story they haven't yet written, because they're young and they still have. But at that young age, man, a lot of these kids have been through a lot already.
Yeah.
They've endured a lot. But we want them to try to take some ownership that life might deal you, you know, a pretty rough deck of cards. You can still rise above that. And then I also like to think I am positive Brent Taylor was already Brent Taylor from a young age. And there, you know, he happened to serve in student government, but there's a lot of students who are leaders or have the capacity or the desire to be leaders that maybe they never got elected to class office, or maybe they were a little more shy, but still have the capacity to lead and to motivate and inspire other people. And we want to find them. So it's fun because we do invite student government students to participate. We invite club members. I mean, it could be from the Honor Society, the Latinos in Action, the cheer groups, the athletic teams, or we'll tell teachers too, hey, teachers, do you have any students you want to nominate? Because sometimes the student, his or herself, won't see the leader potential they have, but maybe a teacher's noticed it. Mm-hmm. Or a teacher said, hey, I want you to go to this. And so we have some that sign up on their own. We have some that maybe go just because there's friends. We always ask them at the beginning, why did you come today? A good chunk of them will say to get out of class, because in Arizona, we do it during the school day. If you're listening and you're anywhere along the Wasatch Front, we are going to hold an event like this for junior high and high school students on May 4th. May the 4th. It's going to be Star Wars themed.
Oh,
May
love
the 4th
it.
Be with you. But it's on a Saturday, so I can't get you out of class. Sorry. But it is open, and you can go to our website to learn more. We have a link to a Google form. It's $10 a student to participate. You get a t-shirt, lunch, and all the training. And to be honest, all the presenters are volunteers. The money maybe covers part of the t-shirt and lunch. It's mostly just to put a little skin in the game. Because what we found, most of the things we do are completely for free. And sometimes when everything's for free, it's easy to maybe sign up and not come. And this, we want to be able to plan accordingly. If we have a lot of people, then we need 10 presenters. We might need to split you into a couple of groups or something. So if you're listening and want to come, MajorBrentTaylor.com and go look for the BT5. Brent Taylor, 5-point system for happiness and health. And in the graduation video, he puts up his hand and holds up the five, which is only funny because, again, he gave that speech before I ever met him. But later in life, Brent and I would always laugh that there's just certain speakers, whether it's at a church meeting or a leadership training or that motivational message, and it seems they frequently have a certain number of things. And the speaker will hold up their hand. Here's three truths I need you to know. Or here's the four takeaways of today. So when I saw this video from Brent, that part was almost like a little inside joke that even at age 17, he had the hand up with five things. Are you ready for him?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Super ready.
Do you want me to give you all five at once or one at a time?
Let's go all five at once and then break them down.
Okay. Number one, don't do anything stupid, which I always joke, we could just stop there if only we could follow that rule. Okay, the first one is don't do anything stupid. The second one is work hard. Again, I think that's definitely something he'd want me to teach our children. Don't do anything stupid, work hard. The third one is to be a good friend. And we talk a lot about relationships and the importance of, you know, people are more important than projects kind of idea. The fourth one is believe in something. So don't do anything stupid. Work hard. Be a good friend. Believe in something. I'm trying to give everyone a chance to write them down. And then the fifth one, I admit every time I hate because I just wish we would run out of time and could only have four. Because the fifth one is stick with it to the end. And the reason I say I hate that one is because that's dumb. I don't want to have to do all the amazing things over and over and over again and try hard over and over and over again and work hard over and over and over again. It gets exhausting. But okay, so let's back up and break them down for a second. So the first one is don't do anything stupid. Now, like I said, I do joke that if only we could follow that principle, we would be done with the list of principles. But it's not the same as don't ever make a mistake. It's not the same as don't ever fall or fail. In fact, I would argue it's the opposite. Don't be stupid and think you can't make mistakes. Don't be stupid and be afraid to take risks. Brent specifically mentions the dangers of addiction, drugs, alcohol, looking for the easy way out. That's one of the things he calls.
Did he already have somebody in his family that was struggling with that?
No. Well, that's a good question. I don't know at what age his. He has one brother immediately younger than him that got involved with drinking and things by the time I met him, but I don't know if he was in high school. That's a good question. Maybe. And maybe that's where that came from. Because he does specifically mention, and he shares a few quotes and some thoughts. The whole talk is 5 minutes. It's quick. Find it on YouTube.
I actually have watched it.
Oh, have you? It's very fun.
I remember when you shared it on Facebook, right? It must have been about around the time that you shared it.
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube or just hang on to the very end because we will put it as a trailer at the, it'll be like the credits at the end of the episode. Yeah, so Michelle, now that I think about it, yes, I do think maybe he'd had some siblings. I'm sure he had some friends that maybe were struggling with drugs and alcohol, but that definitely in time would prove to be a plague in both Brent and my family with siblings on both sides. And again, he's only 17, an age when a lot of people think drugs and alcohol are maybe fun or just for kicks and it's an experiment. And I think he maybe had that foresight from a young age to say, that's not your best coping strategy. Let's not look for that. When we talk about it in the BT5 workshops, we really break it down as decision-making. Decision-making is huge, not just in leadership, but just life.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're paralyzed. We can't make decisions because we're worried we're making the wrong decision, or how do we make the decision, or what decision should we make, or what if I made the... And we trip ourselves, or if we make a decision, sometimes we want to blame someone else or look for a way out or a cop out. And so what I'll share, if I'm ever sharing this principle, I'll share the fact that Brent and I were married while he was alive for 15 years. And during those 15 years, we made a lot of decisions as a couple about our family, about his career, about the fact that I would stay home and not pursue my own career, running for office, deploying with the Army. And each of those really big turning point decisions, I feel we made very carefully and intentionally. And because we did make those decisions together and intentionally, we never once looked for the easy way out. We didn't point the finger of blame. When life took us to where it did the day he died, I could look back and say, huh, I didn't see it taking us here, but I don't have to beat myself up with regret that maybe we made the wrong choice. And that's a bold thing to say. I can have heartache without regret. And no regret doesn't mean I would never improve or maybe do things differently. But there's a certain element of peace in your decision making when you go through a thoughtful process to make a decision, even if maybe it turns out there could have been a different decision or the decision takes you somewhere you didn't see. You can at least have some peace, because I will tell you, my life would be a mess right now if I would let myself rethink and regret and want to rewrite every decision that led to where it did. And I think that would be the stupid he warned me against.
Right. I see it in that statement, intention and then acceptance.
Both. Thank you. Yes.
So intention being, we intentionally made this choice.
We didn't flip a coin. Or...
And then you have the ability to have acceptance regardless of the outcome.
Oh,
and
I love that.
And
I
then
love
you,
how you
you're
put
able
that.
To put accountability on that page.
Yes. And acceptance and accountability go hand in hand. And I think they're becoming less and less common in today's world, to where we don't want to accept the outcome life throws at us. And we don't want to accept accountability. That I can say the decisions we made are what led to where he died. True.
When I worked with women.
And I can be okay with that.
Yeah. When I worked with women in childbirth, oftentimes they had already had one or two babies, but they felt unempowered in their childbirth, and they felt like a lot of the choices being made were not ones that they were comfortable with, that they didn't fully understand
them,
what was happening because of them, and they felt out of control in that circumstance. So part of being a doula was to teach people what are the risks and what are the benefits of certain decision making in that childbirth process. And also, I would teach them how to ask questions to gain that information, because
I love that.
Circumstances can change whether the risk outweigh the benefits,
right?
Depending on what's going on.
Sure.
And so I love that, because in teaching women that, the power of having a doula at a birth is that you teach them how to be intentional about the choices that are being made, and regardless of the outcome. And hopefully it's a healthy baby, but it's not always that,
Not always, sure.
And
there
so
can still be complications.
They can feel like we did the best we could, and we were in power of it.
That, I was going to say empowerment. It wasn't a decision made for me or around me.
Exactly.
And that's what we talk a lot about. Because keep in mind, these are mostly teenagers. And how do some teenagers make decisions based on what the other kid says?
Right.
Or what looks good or will make them popular.
Absolutely.
And we'll tell people, and again, I'll say this to high school kids, but I'll also say this to corporate executives. Get all the advice you can. Ask people's opinions, read the book, watch the TikTok, get the input, but you need to make the decision. And like you said, to own it, to accept it, to be accountable for it. And that means you can't put the blame on someone else, But you've also got to have thick enough skin that you're going to own your decision, even if maybe the people around you do disagree. And I'll admit, I've mentioned this before, every time we said we were having a baby after about three or four, every time Brent ran for office, every time he was going to deploy after the first or second time, we had a lot of people pushing back on those choices. And I remember particularly after my fifth baby, right after his third deployment, I'll admit I wasn't in a very good mindset. So everyone's outside opinion was weighing on me. And it was making me worry about our decisions and second guess our decisions. And I kind of had to shake that off, especially now in retrospect, and say, hey, we made the decisions we made and we went through the different steps and intentionality mm-hmm. and empowerment. And we asked all the questions. And if other people didn't agree with our decisions, that's okay. Mm-hmm. I can let them have their choice to disagree with me without beating myself up. So I think that's where we say don't be stupid.
Right. We're not just saying don't ever do anything wrong. It takes you out of being the victim of your life choice or circumstance, right?
Yep.
Now you're in the driver's seat.
You're the driver.
Instead of
being the author.
The passenger and just going along in life as a passenger and not as the person driving.
Exactly. You're the author, you're the driver, and there's going to be bumps along the road. And you can accept both of those truths. So that's the first one. Don't do anything stupid. The second one, I think would be Brent's favorite, was work hard. He was by all means a workaholic. To work hard, and he talks about the importance of honest work, working with integrity. And he specifically mentions, like, if you're at work, are you putting in a full day's work? Are you working and earning what you're getting paid to do? Are you the kind of person people can rely on to do the job? Do you run away when it's hard or when there is pushback? Or are you willing to really stick it out? And the story I like to tell with this one, particular to Brent, is his family grew up without a lot of money. He was mm-hmm. the second of eight kids. Mom tried to stay home as a mom as much as she could. Dad worked two, if not three jobs most of the time. And along the way, based on their family income, he would qualify for free lunch at school. Now, Brent was not a big fan of a free lunch, even from a young age. And not that there's anything wrong with taking help when you need it, but I just use this as an example of how he viewed this. And it was junior high particularly. Now, I want everyone listening to put yourself back in junior high, which probably makes us all shudder because no one wants to go back to junior high. But he didn't want to take the free lunch because he didn't want to just get it for nothing. He didn't want to skip lunch because he's a hungry growing boy. So he went in and talked to the lunch ladies. And he said, can I help you serve lunch so I can earn my lunch? I mean, that to me is crazy. I don't know that mm-hmm. I would have done that as a junior high kid. So every day in seventh grade, he put on plastic gloves and a hairnet, served whatever was for school lunch, and then he ate his. And he ate it with a sense of satisfaction that this, you know, $1.25 meal was something he had worked for. So we try to help the students see hard work doesn't always mean you'll be famous and rich and everything will go perfectly. But there is satisfaction to working hard, to
Absolutely.
Looking yourself in the mirror and saying, I did the best. I took calculated, thoughtful risks. I really tried. And then even if you fail or even if something falls apart, again, it's that acceptance. I can accept the fact that I worked hard. I didn't not get the job, the promotion, the position, the whatever for lack of effort.
Right.
And so, again, we're trying to kind of lay this foundation.
I love that story about Brent.
Good piece.
It reminds me, again, that I think John and Brent would have been too...
They could be best friends right now. Maybe they have a podcast in heaven. Is there a podcast in heaven?
Right. Like, I mean, it's kind of crazy. Like, his principles for living are my husband's principles
really?
For living. And I remember when at John's celebration of life, a sub that he had on the job was unhappy with John. And I would hear about this story from John's perspective. But that guy showed up at our, and there was some time that a couple of years that I no longer heard about these stories, but John was always challenged and this guy just could not get it right. And John would press him like, no, you've got to do that right because I've got to have this kind of a job for my homeowners. And, you know, because John was a house builder.
Yep.
Anyway, at the celebration of life, this guy came to me and said, John taught me the value of an honest day's work and to do things right, even if it meant taking more time.
Beautiful.
And
maybe losing a little money, maybe not having quite the profit margin.
Yeah. And he said, I would not have the business I have today. And this man went on to have his own company and his own
business. To be very successful. Oh my gosh, I love that. Okay. Okay, that takes us right into number three, which is to be a good friend. And the phrase I always use for that is people are more important than projects. And the only reason I know that phrase so well is because I have to remind myself. Sometimes I'll get in a fit that the house is such a mess, or, you know, my little girl needs this or that, but I'm trying to do something. And really focusing on people, relationships. Look at that relationship John had with that man. Now, him being a friend didn't mean he coddled him and let him just do the bare minimum. No, the real friendship, the real relationship was elevating the person around him to a higher level. To holding him, to teaching him that, hey, we don't cut corners. You'll never really succeed that way. And so we look at communication, the importance of communication in relationships. We look at the importance of respecting other people, their differing opinions, and really just the fact that you'll never really be successful if you don't focus on being useful. Mm-hmm. And we share a quote from Eleanor Roosevelt that says, for our success to really matter, it's got to contribute to the success of someone else. Mm-hmm. And I feel Brent did that well in his life, in our city. I think that's what all of us would hope to do.
In our transportation system.
Yes. Bless the UTA. Side story, if you want that, call me. That's an episode for another day. But to be a good friend doesn't necessarily mean you hang out with everybody on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And we talk about that with high school kids. There's a certain chemistry in friendships, and you don't have that with every single person. But you can be friendly. You can offer that extension of friendship. Maybe it's inviting someone to sit with you at the table or go with you guys to the game. You can be mindful of the fact that some people around you might not have a lot of friends. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's all they need is for you.
I love that. You know, there's kids in junior high and high school that are working jobs, and you're working with kids your age, and they're not necessarily your friend.
Right.
But you could still be a friend to them.
And are you dependable?
Could you be helpful to them? Can you say, hey, the policies here are this, and I see that you're doing that, and I'm concerned because the management might, you know, have a problem with that.
Absolutely.
You know, you could be a friend by just kind of,
again, elevating.
Maybe being honest in your communication, not telling them how it should be done, but maybe if you're really seeing someone struggling or not, or cutting the corners, a lot of people want to cut corners today. There is no benefit in cutting corners, right? And so to help people learn those lessons, that is being a true friend.
And that's leadership. And that's being a leader. Because, again, being friendly doesn't mean giving everyone their way and making sure everybody feels warm and snuggly. Sometimes, in fact, Brent's grandfather one time told him that he would spend his life telling people what they needed to hear, not necessarily what they wanted to hear. And it proved to be somewhat prophetic in his politics, in his military leadership. We're laughing.
But, I'm laughing because I see myself in that comment.
Wait, but you're honest, and honest, you don't have to be so honest that you're rude, and you don't have to be rude in how you are honest. But being a good friend means you're really interested in the other person's well-being. And sometimes that might mean you need to, or maybe it might mean you need to sever a friendship.
Yeah.
If you're in a toxic relationship, or if there's something, being a good friend does not mean be a doormat. It might mean you're a good friend to yourself by walking away and leaving a toxic environment. Or
and in walking
for these
away,
kids.
You might be being the best to that friend, right?
Absolutely.
And then
not enabling
saying,
that poor behavior.
Why are you walking away from this
especially
relationship?
Especially in a junior high school mindset, right?
Right. Yeah. You can say, I don't feel like you're taking me in places I want to go.
If I can't elevate you, I'm not willing to go down. Excuse me.
Okay. I love that.
Which takes us into the next one. Believe in something. Brent specifically says in the video, it can be a cause, it can be a religion, whatever it is, decide and then believe it. And then again, that goes back to how do you make your decisions? Your work ethic comes from your values, your beliefs. The way you treat other people is based on maybe how you feel about yourself and your position in this planet we call Earth. The story I like to tell with this one really quickly is we need to believe in something. It's hard to believe in something if you don't first believe in yourself. But there's something magical. Once you can believe in yourself, you can believe in something, some cause, religion, whatever it is. And then you're able to believe in other people. And I remember being at the airport the day Brent left, and I had a 2-month-old, a 2-year-old, 4-year-old, 6-year-old, 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 12-year-old. He's still alive, but leaving to Afghanistan. We have no idea he's going to die. We just think it's awful he's going to be gone a year. We're all in tears at the glass. We got a gate pass right up to the boarding at the airport. We're looking out the glass. He's in the cockpit because the captain let him look back into us. We're a mess. And he sent me a text message with 3 quick words. And the words were, "You got this." And I can't tell you how many times over that next year I'd have to think, okay, Brent thinks I can do this. Brent thinks I can do this. Brent thinks I can do this. And then imagine after he died, I'm trying to raise these seven kids for whatever crazy reason Brent thought I could do this. And there's a power when you don't believe in yourself, but someone vocalizes their belief in you. So if you're listening, think of one person today, please, one person today that you could give some type of positive affirmation that you believe in them. You got this. I believe in you. I'm proud of you. Say it to your kids, say it to your partner, say it to your friend, your coworker, whatever. Because it's, again, it's hard to believe in something. It's hard to find purpose and cause and meaning in life if you don't believe in yourself. And we all from time to time don't believe in ourselves. And that's where we need each other, mm-hmm. which again, relationships feeds into the ability to believe. So believe in something and by all means, vocalize your belief in others. And then the last one, oh, too bad, we're out of time. Just kidding. I do hate this one, but I love it because it really is the most important. And stick with it to the end doesn't mean check the four lists and then do number five. Stick with it to the end means you got to do one through four over and over again, continually. Mm-hmm. You want to make it a habit. You want it to be just, it's part of who you are. These four values, the way you make decisions, the way you treat other people, the work ethic you have, your personal values and beliefs. That's something that you can't just do for a day, a week, one shot. It needs to become who you are. And that's the, and that's really the crux of what the BT5 is. It's not just a checklist of how to be a leader or how to lead. It's how to become a service-oriented leader. And then again, if we were in the workshop, we would take all of us and we'd rally around with markers and small groups and posters and say, okay, what are your five? And Michelle, it is amazing what these young people come up with. And
I want to go just to observe.
May the 4th be with you, Weber High School. Some students will kind of vehemently disagree with each other in their group, and that's fine because we let them pick five. They don't have to, you don't need to have 30 from your whole group or something, but we say try to come up with five that you can kind of land on together. But it's fun as they take the time to do that. As facilitators, we walk around the room and hear them kind of arguing their case. Well, no, this one's really important. No, I'm not. This one's got to be on my list. Or I feel this way about that principle or that thought. And they're thinking. And then the magic happens when they share it around the room. Mm-hmm. Because by the end, we've got 50 to 100 really awesome one-liners from teenagers.
Right.
And then I leave and I'm so hopeful for America and the future of the world. And I say, okay, there is goodness around us.
And then you go home and turn on the television at night and you're like, ah. Oh.
I know. So it has been a great thing. Like I said, it's from a speech given 6 years before I ever met Brent. It's from a speech given 6 years before I ever met Brent that I didn't know about until about 6 weeks after he died. But it's words that guide me in when I think, oh, what would Brent say about this? I know because he said so. And I've got a video of it. It's priceless to me, even though it's grainy from, it's a VHS that was turned into a DVD that's now uploaded to YouTube. So just anticipate that kind of quality. But I would encourage everyone listening, go look into the BT5 a little bit more. If you live somewhere and you're interacting with your school, your university, your team, your corporation, and you want us to come share with you, like I said, on high school campuses, we usually will do a 3 or 4 hour workshop with five different alumni, but I can also just come and do a workshop and be the facilitator on my own. It's a great opportunity to think, break down, why do you do what you do? It's kind of that whole Simon Sinek why, but then also focusing on how. Because why is a great question to ask at first, but we get stuck there and we got to get into the house. So find us on MajorBrentTaylor.com. You can email us at info@MajorBrentTaylor.com. And if you are somewhere within driving distance of Weber High School, we will be there on May the 4th. Be with you.
I love it. 2024. I love it. It's really inspiring.
We'll
and
even feed
I,
you
I
lunch.
Love that so often we kind of discount that teenagers have the ability to really think in a more futuristic way, to be visionary, to have purpose. And I wish
and
as
really
a
profound.
Kid, if I had had that kind of leadership in my growing up, because I was such a driven person anyway.
Right.
I mean, I was entrepreneurial.
Imagine if it were channeled.
Yeah. If it had been channeled in a very intentional way, oh my gosh, I think of where I could be today, it would be so different. But also, I'm really glad that I am where I'm at today. So
yeah,
it's okay. Anyway,
Come join us, BT5, May the 4th.
I want to come.
Come.
Just
Weber
serve
High.
We
can help us with lunch and snacks and t-shirts and things. It takes a lot of people. You're the
best.
I
would love that.
Okay, I'll get you a t-shirt.
So I want you all to know, if you're listening today, you can subscribe and it's free. Just hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening to us. And give us a rating and a review. Your comments really help build us in the search bars or the search for podcast. And if you know someone who is just an everyday person, maybe they haven't achieved great big things, but you know that they have a story of real resilience, that they've really weathered a storm and they've learned some things, you find them inspiring, we probably will too. Can just click on the little button either on Instagram or Facebook. There's a contact me little bar. You can set up a calendar invite to have a 15-minute call where we could talk about your story, about what you've learned about being resilient and moving forward and living your best life.
Thank you to our producer, Kellyanne Halverson, to our great sponsor, Miki Couture, on this cold and snowy day. And remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles other people are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day, everyone.
The Brent Taylor's 5-point system for happiness and health. Just call it the BT5 for short. The first is, 1, don't do anything stupid. 2, work hard. It doesn't matter how much you earn or what you do, but that you love what you're doing and that you enjoy it. There's satisfaction in good work and honest labor. Emerson once said, it's what you do that makes you happy, not how much you get paid. So enjoy hard work. 3, be a good friend. Sounds simple, doesn't it? But are you a good friend to all you know? Are you someone that your friends can confide in? And are you someone that your friends enjoy being around? Can you be counted on? Do you follow through with what you say? Do you give your word and keep it? I admonish you to be a good friend to all you know. 4, believe in something. It can be a cause, it can be a religion, but decide what it is in your life that matters and believe in it and live it. 5, stick with it to the end. Hang in there, finish it. Come through for yourselves and others.